Hey, everybody. How you doing? I hope you're having a wonderful morning, day, evening, day, night, wherever you're at. Thanks for tuning in to a brand new Ike Live 2.0. Man, it's been so amazing with this new format. First things first. Thank you, guys. Thank you, girls, for all the comments on this new format of the show. So many good comments on this new one-on-one format. And I'm having a ton of fun doing it. So I appreciate all the great comments. And if you've got suggestions on guests, keep sending them in. Definitely, we're trying to fulfill what you guys and girls want to hear. So thank you. And, you know, remember, we're still doing the old Ike Live shows, too. Hopefully, you got to tune in to the most recent Halloween special where we were dissecting a little bit about what was going on with the whole Bass Pro Tour MLF situation. Remember, listen, if you're listening to these right now and you're like, hey, I missed that show. I missed the Craig Lamb show. I missed an old show. You could always go back and listen to old Ike Lives or watch old Ike Lives. Go to IkeLive.com. Also, you any of your streaming platforms, StreamYard, Podbeam, all those. Check them out. It's Ike Live on any of those apps. Real quick, just a little housekeeping before we get our guest on. And by the way, very excited if you're listening right now. Very excited to have on this guy. Will Davis Jr. is going to be joining us in just a second here. So excited to have him on the show. But just a little catch up real quick. The Ike Foundation, our season tournament-wise is complete. All the youth tournaments are done. Our kayak event is done. And last but not least, we've got a big thing coming, which is our scholarship banquet. It's happening at the end of January. You know, that's a big deal for us, for not just raising money, but, you know, really trying to get new kids fishing. The scholarship banquet's always a great time. We're going to have music and food and drinks and also a little gambling again this year. I don't know how they pull that off, but we're going to be doing a little casino gambling. So go to the IkeFoundation.org and you can get your tickets already. It's never too early to get tickets. The tables are going fast. So head over there, IkeFoundation.org, and get your tickets for that event. All right, let's bring this guy on. Man, he's had a busy year. He's had a couple big W's coming off a big W. Very excited to get him on the show, especially because of his background. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. But let's patch him in. Joining us on Ike Live 2.0, the one and only Will Davis Jr. Will, what's up, man?
Man, just excited to be on the Ike show, man. You know, it's a dream come true.
Heck yeah, it's a dream come true for me. I got to see you down most recently at the national championship down at Hartwell, and when I ran into you, it was like, man, I was stoked for you because I know that event. There's so much going on, but I was like, first thing I said to you, I'm like, you got to come on the show, and I asked you before you won. Is that correct? All right, I just want people to know that. I don't want people to think that I'm like jumping on the bandwagon because you just want a pretty big event, you know. But man, I'm excited to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on. This is awesome. I do a lot of these podcasts, and I kind of want to start from the beginning because, you know, the reality of it is you're still new to a lot of people. You know, a lot of people watch and listen to the show are young people, and they probably know who you are. They're following like rabid followers of bass and what's going on in the tournament scene. But a lot of our listeners are old heads. They're old timers. They're kind of like, they're not even that into tournament fishing. They're like, who the heck is Will Davis Jr.? A lot of people, I think, feel like you came from nowhere, and I know your story a little bit. So that's not totally true, but I do want to get into that a little bit. How the heck, Will, did you get to where you're at right now at such a young age? Like, I think that's what a lot of people are saying. They're like, damn, like Will just came out of nowhere. Like, he's still kind of a young guy. Like, what, how'd that happen? But this isn't like overnight success for you. Talk a little bit about that.
So my dad, he owns a family business called Davis Bait Company, and he's been in the business for ever since the early 80s. And I came along in 92, and he took me out fishing when I was old enough, you know, to walk and hold a rod. And I just took to it, and me and him grew closer together because of fishing, and I'm grateful because of I'm grateful for the sport because of that.
Yeah.
Excuse me, because of that. And with that being said, you know, he taught me how to throw a bait caster and fish all the way up through you know, my pre-years, and then on to high school years and college, and you know, and then I fished the Federation and tried the Opens, and that really didn't work out too well. And all of a sudden, I finally made it through the nation a couple of years back. And so it takes a long time to get, you know, to basically where me and you are at.
Yeah.
You know, it just don't happen overnight, you know.
I think that's the big thing. I think a lot of people from afar can look at your story and you know, see your success that you've had this year, especially, and say, oh man, it's just, it came out of nowhere. But, you know, just in that short description, I mean, you know, to put it a different way, you've been training for this since you were a little kid. Like, literally, you've been, whether it was training on paper, like it wasn't physical training, like it wasn't your dad saying, all right, you got it, but you were training for this your whole life.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
Since I first held a rod, you know.
Yeah.
So it's pretty wild. It's a wild ride, as you know, and very, very thankful for it.
Yeah. But I got to know, because I'm just putting myself in your shoes, and I can remember, you know, for me, it was my uncle and my grandfather. You know, my dad passed away when I was super little, so I had my uncle and my grandfather there as my mentors, and like, I remember digging in their tackle boxes, right, Will? Like, I remember my grandfather's tackle box. And as a young kid, I would open that tackle box, you know, like three trays came out when I opened up. It was one of them old school boxes, you know?
That's right. That's right. And one of them device got the phone out. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a ting. And I remember being in awe of what was in that box, like the sights. You know, like picking them up, the sounds, the smell. I remember it all. So for me, that was an amazing experience. For you, describe what it was like. Like, I'm baffled, because I couldn't imagine being 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, and growing up in an environment where it's like lures and baits and plastics and this, and it must have been incredible. Describe that to me.
Yeah, you know, my dad would get me down there, and I'd work for him at his bait business, and I'm very all over the place. You know, most fishermen are, you know, are mine for over there and over there, and I walk into his shop, and I'm just in awe and looking at all the different lures that he's made and lures that he's collected. And you know, it's just growing up in that environment was truly something special, looking back on it, you know. So very grateful for that, for sure.
That's super cool. Now, I read somewhere, I can't remember, that you were also into, I think it was competitive shooting sports. Talk a little bit about that. What age were you into that?
So I started shooting American Skeet at the age of 7, and started, you know, getting some success, getting some exposure at some big tournaments, you know, especially when I got to 10 years old. I broke the world record for the youngest ever to shoot 100 out of 100 in American Skeet.
Wow.
I don't know if that's broke now or not. You know, it's not like the Genesis world record or nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's written in stone like the Genesis. But with that being said, I shot all through, you know, basically my teen years, and I just got burned out. I mean, I shot 30,000 rounds a year or more, and shot in a lot of big tournaments, a lot of stress. We shot the Masters, the World Championship, and at that level, if you miss, you're done.
And yeah.
The stress on a young person. It's real, and I think it really helped me to get where I'm at today, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The mental toughness of it. I mean, you know all about sports, being from where you're from, and It's all mental, basically.
Yes. So shooting sports help. You think looking back on it, it helped you?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, it helped me on the focus. It helped me on the competition standpoint of it. Just the sheer grind of staying focused from the first shot to the last shot.
Yeah, it's funny.
From the first day to the last day, but sometimes we just don't make it to the last day.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that, because we've had over 10 years here on the show, we've had other guests on that are fishing, you know, at the pro level, and a lot of them were successful in other sports like you, and whether it was, you know, baseball or wrestling in college, and a lot of them echoed that same thing that you just said, which is, you know, even though the sports are completely different, that the mindset of competition and the awareness of stress and pressure and those things helped them, you know, coming from a different sport. So it's interesting that you say that. That's probably the third or fourth time I've heard that, that right. sentiment, you know?
Right. Very, it's definitely true.
Very interesting. So I want to go back just a little. So, you know, I'm just closing my eyes and I can see in my mind, this is like this training your whole life to do this, and not officially, but that's what you were doing. And then, you know, you give the opens a shot, and then you start fishing the Bass Nation. You start fishing the nation tournaments at the state level, and you grind your way to what in the amateur realm or the grassroots realm is the biggest tournament in the world, which is the Bass Nation National Championship. And I know, because it's so great to have you on the show here, because it's the exact route that I took. So I love hearing stories of guys that come up that way. It's very exciting for me. But so you grind your way to this event, which I think it was 2022. It was at Pickwick, if I'm correct. And tell me about that process a little bit, because I want people to know. I want our listeners to hear it from you, how hard it was just to get there. Like, that's not an easy, like, you don't just show up at Lay Lake for a tournament and be like, yep, I made the national championship. Like, it was hard getting there. Talk a little bit about that.
So I'm in a club called Pro Line Bassmasters, and there's like 10 or 12 of us. And you have to join a club to start off with.
Right.
After that, you go compete in like your state's, I guess, like a series of tournaments to, I guess it's like top 40 to make the state championship of each tournament.
So yep.
it's pretty feasible to make, or reasonable to make the state championship. During the series of tournaments for your state to before the state championship, if you win one, that qualifies you for the state team, which they take 10 of us. With that being said, they take seven of them, eight of the guys that won throughout the year, the state championship, you go compete at that. They take the angler of the year, and they take the winner of the state championship, and that makes the 10-man team. The 10-man team consists of the winners of the whole deal for your state. They go compete at the regional, whether it be like the Western, the Southern, Northern, Central.
Right.
I think there four or five?
I think there was four. Okay. Back when I fished it, there was four. I don't know if they've added a division since, but
So you go and compete wherever your region tournament is. For all the states, it's in that region, of course. And you don't have to win the tournament. You just got to beat everybody that's in your state.
Yeah, you got to be number one out of those 10 guys from your state. You have to be the top dog.
You got to be the man. And once you win that, or the highest finisher, you go to the national championship, and then it's every man for himself.
Yeah.
And then they take the top three for the Bassmaster Classic, and they take the winner. He gets the berth to the League Series.
Yeah.
That's the route that I took. So it's, I'm a prime example, and I've told this on stage and another podcast, but I mean it from the heart, and that's why I keep on saying that. I never thought I'd be sitting here talking to Mike Iaconelli on Ike Live. And I never realized or never dreamed that I would fish the Classic. You know, I did, but never actually thought I'd fish the Classic.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
Let alone the Elite Series. And man, what a wild ride. So
it's crazy.
I'm a prime example. If you want something bad in life, bad enough, you pursue it and pray about it, man. You can be there.
Yeah.
It's
such an awesome story. And you explained it so well that it's hard to get there through the national, you know, through the national championship. Like to get to that tournament is hard. And I remember, you know, it's 100 years ago when I was in that route, but I do remember, you know, how hard it was to get there and, you know, how grateful I was to be there at that event. But you hit on something that I think is a great thing in this sport, especially the way that it's set up, is that you had a dream, right? You know, it's like it, you know, you set, had a goal, you had a dream, and you were pretty much a regular dude, right? Like, I said that in my speech when I got to come to the national champion speak, and I tried to convey that.
Which was awesome.
It was so awesome being there. It felt like everything was like full circle for me being there at that event, speaking to you guys. It felt so great. But, you know, I can remember just looking around at all the other competitors, and they were regular dudes, you know, from regular walks of life, you know, like every state, you know, there was electricians and carpenters and dude that worked at Walmart and, you know, just regular people that they didn't have a silver spoon growing up. They didn't have a special invitation to qualify. They didn't, you know, they were just regular people. And I love that. That's how you said it. You know, you're just a regular guy and you're had this chance to live this dream. And then for it to come true, it's got to feel unbelievable. Like you got to be pinching yourself every once in a while.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's never been about the money and it's never been about the winning. It's always been about competing against the fish to me, you know,
Yeah.
Because if I can beat the fish, I can beat the fisherman.
Yeah.
But that's the way my mindset is.
And, yeah.
And to win the national championship last year with my dad still around, which is so special, and get to celebrate that moment with him for all the hard years and the work that he's put in to provide for his family and build up his bait business. And to get me where I'm at. It was very special, man. Very emotional tournament.
Yeah. Had to be. I can relate the when I won the national championship, I didn't have my whole family there, but when I won the Delaware River in 2014, the Elite tournament, it was the same feeling. Felt very emotional and you know, your family and friends there, and especially having my uncle there, you know, felt unbelievable. And you know, for me it was like that was the place that my family taught me how to fish. And I actually, in that tournament, Will, I went and fished places that I fished as a kid. And, you know, like that connection, like even though my grandfather has passed, that connection was, I'm like getting chills talking about it right now. It's just amazing. But what was more important to you in that national championship win in 2022, making the Classic or making the Elites? Like, It's funny, and I ask that from a legitimate way, because when I won the national championship, there was no Elite berth back then, or it would have been the top 150 berth.
That's right.
But they only gave me the Classic. So I can't imagine, you know, having both, you know, like these jewels, like a diamond and a ruby. Like, which one's better?
Right.
You know, like, I don't know. They're both freaking awesome. Was there one of the two that you were like, oh man, this is amazing? Or were they at the same level?
They was definitely at the same level. You know, growing up as a kid, you know, I was there when you won your Classic. I was the young man out there watching in the stands. So I always wanted to make the Classic. And that was my ultimate goal from the get-go. Never dreamed about making the League Series. And the way that it all just folded out was just truly a blessing. But, you know, I guess it's been about 7 or 8 years ago. I woke up one morning and I just thought the guy, is it Don Dave that calls our names out in the class?
Yeah, yep.
He said, here comes Will Davis from Sylacauga, Alabama. And they open up these big red curtains. And I go out and I wake up. And it was so real, man. I was so mad because I didn't get to just, you know, finish that dream.
Yeah.
So that was my ultimate goal, was to make the Classic. And then after making them, you know, getting the late berth and the Classic, man, it was such a blessing.
Yeah.
And I'd say both of them was they're the same in my mind of making that, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And I've had that dream as a kid, and I still have dreams. Like, I have dreams now that I'm going to win again. You know, I'm toward you're at the beginning of your career and I'm at the end, and you know, I still have those dreams. Like, I still want to win again, and I still have the dreams of being on stage. And so those dreams don't go away as you get older, they stay. But speaking of dreams, so, you know, for our listeners and viewers, you know, it seemed like this amazing, easy transition for you from winning the national championship, boom, thrust into the elites, which is spooky and scary and intimidating and all that. But
it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. It can be a nightmare.
It can be a nightmare, for sure.
Yeah, but
awesome, but can be a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. But you're thrust into this, and dude, you're adapting very well. Like, when I look back at the history of anglers that have made it through the national championship or made it through that route, the ratios, honestly, well, and I'm just being honest, the ratio's not all that great. You know, you got about 20% of the guys that then go ahead and try, you know, get into the higher level and make it. About 20% is all. Some examples, like, you know, Denny Brower, you know, handful of guys, myself, handful of Brandon Polinick, handful of guys have been able to do it, but very small percentage. But you made it look pretty seamless. Like, you adapted very well. You looked comfortable. Your stats were right there as a seasoned vet, even though it was your first year. But it all kind of built up to Lay Lake, and I want to talk, definitely switch gears and talk about that one. Man, that was a big win, Will, to be able to enter your rookie season and then close a tournament out with a win on a fishery that is essentially your home fishery. Even though that was months and months and months and months ago, it still has to be fresh in your mind. Like, tell me about that a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, like, you talk about how you grew up on the river that you won.
Yeah.
And that's how I grew up. You know, I caught my first bass on that lake. And to win from my home crowd, you know, I knew it was going to be a challenge. And I knew that it wasn't going to be easy going out there. The fishing was tough. I mean, you fished that tournament. And you actually came up here and pre-fished. And I seen you, we was upriver. I guess it was back in March. Anyway,
yep.
I think it's right after Santee Cooper, right before Santee Cooper. I can't remember.
It was right near the Classic. It was either right before or right after
that's
the
Classic. That's right. Yep. That's right. And yep. You was in island, in and out of pockets. I said, look at this cat. And then you come by and I was like, never mind, that's Mike, you know. And you was in your zone, man. You never looked up. You just threw your hand up like this and just never looked up. And yeah. I was like, he's in his zone, you know, and we get in that, you know. With that being said, it was a grind of a tournament, and I knew that it was going to be a grind of a tournament. And people really don't understand how hard it is to win an elite series, but it's like it's equivalent to winning, like, I guess, I mean, the PGA.
I would agree. I would agree.
So you have to have everything, and there's no team. I mean, there's a team with your wife, of course, and your family, but you're the man. You are it.
Yep.
mentally, physically, you are the decision maker. You are the coach. You are the player. You're it. And there's no pit crew. I mean, there is, but there's not like that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to win one of these tournaments. You have to get everything out of your way.
Yeah, all that, and I want to reiterate all that pressure and stress on you, and it's your home fishery, right? Like, I remember when it was here in Philadelphia when I won the one on the river here. Dude, I felt like the weight of the Northeast, like not even just New Jersey, Pennsylvania, but like the entire Northeast, the weight of that was on my shoulders, you know, because I was expected to win. Like they expected me. They wanted it to happen.
Oh, you'd have been
so
talked
bad.
About if you didn't win, I promise you.
Yeah. So, I mean, so not only is it hard to win an elite, but you have the pressure of being the hometown guy. That must have been immense amount of pressure.
Yeah, it was. You know, I had Marvin Nendez. Me and him roomed throughout the year, and he's actually stayed. My parents lived right across the driveway from me, and our boat shed's out there in the backyard. And so he stayed with me throughout the week, and, you know, he was a good mentor to me all year. And he told me, he said, man, just go out there and be yourself. And I knew with them voices, and you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
They come creeping in on that last day.
They do.
And I just kind of just kept on grinding. And I knew that I was on the right deal. But there comes a point in time during a tournament to win it. And it always happens on the last day, the last final, the second half of the final leg of the race.
Yeah.
That you have to make a decision. And it's going to pay off or it's not going to pay off.
Yes.
But you got to make that decision if you're going to win, because you feel it. You know, you feel it in your soul.
Yeah.
And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I just made the right decision that day.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So if you're watching and listening and you haven't seen this tournament, of course, you can go back. Go to Bassmaster.com. Go back in the archives and watch this show. Watch the lives, especially on the last day. You had something happen that was amazing toward the end of the day. And I call them those never give up moments, because I think everyone, whether you compete or not, if you're listening to this podcast, some point in your life, you've had a never give up moment. Tell me about this one that happened to you in this tournament, because it was pretty amazing.
All right, so I call it my Whitey story. In practice, I go in there, and I've been saving this creek to go into on Wednesday, and I knew that this is the time of year to catch them, and I've won a lot of money out of there. Martin Nendez, I said, you know, told you he would stay with me. He told me he would shove every rod up, you know what, if he caught me on any of my places, you know. And I told him, I went and checked that. And I'm like, dude, I'm not going to check nothing until it's time. You know, I don't want nobody seeing me on nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't practice on a lot of stuff that week. I just, because we fished 30 tournaments here a year, you know, before I made the league series.
Right.
So I knew kind of like where they was going to be. I hoped. And so I get up here to the house on Monday evening, and he's like, dude, I'd blow this tournament out if it was tomorrow. I said, oh, really, Big Daddy? You know what I'm saying? I was like, oh, really? And he's like, oh, man, they're everywhere. I said, was you such and such and such and such and right over there by that oak tree? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
He's like, yeah. I said, that's one of my places. I mean, you should have just seen the life just drain from his body, you know? So I'm like, the heck with it. If he's telling me there's whatever in there, I'm going to go find out for myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in there and pluck a few of them. I ain't about to get beat on my own fish, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes you got to play defense, you know. You know exactly what I mean on that standpoint.
Yeah.
So I go in there, and I'm like, I ain't seen no 7-pounder. I ain't seen no 6-pounder. Like, I ain't seeing nothing but 2-pounders. I'm like, he must be blind. Something ain't right. They ain't just leave like that. And, well, he started telling me that these fish were out in the middle of the pocket and they were coming up on a glide bait. I'm like, dude, you ain't going to catch them fish. I mean, I've been fishing there my whole life. They're smart. They don't get your shad as long as your leg. And, I mean, they know the action of the bait. They ain't going to get it because I've tried it. I've been with some of the best people that does it, and they can't catch them.
Yeah.
So I just let him keep on thinking that he's going to catch them, you know. Well, I come around this corner, and there's this fish that had a white film around her eye. And I'm like,
huh,
man, that's weird.
Yeah.
Fuck, I named her Whitey. She's about 3.5-4 pounds. She's right up under a bush, right up under it. And she'd swim out. So I get there. I get back to the house. I'm like, dude, you know, you see this fish in there? Oh, why? I named her Whitey. He's like, yeah, she's over there, whatever. He's like, you see all them big ones? I said, no, man, I ain't see none of them, you know. And he's like, okay. Well, he said there's like 4 or 5 of the boats that was in this pocket or this creek during, you know, that day, Monday.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, I ain't seen nobody in there. So fast forward, Saturday, after we weighed in, no, excuse me, right before we weighed in, he comes over to me and he says, you got him? I said, no, not really. I said, I got like 14 and some change, you know. And he's like, sorry, you'll get them more. I said, you leave me any in that creek? Because I didn't go hit it, you know. I mean, I was going to save the last day anyways. And Lord knows, they probably ain't even a brim left in there as all the traffic's been in there.
Yeah.
So he said, yeah, there's one. As soon as you go in there, right up under that bush. Or I said, she got a white film up her eyes. Yeah. He said, I had her bite twice, and I missed her both times. And I said, all right. I said, that's old Whitey. I appreciate you. So the next day, I just kept it in the back of my mind, you know, and I knew I was going to hit it, but that creek's weird. You got to have the timing just right, you know. You got to have the sun up. You got to have the current by the turbines running up there just right. I mean, it's tidal, basically, up there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know all about how crucial that is. So I was like, I'm just going to wait. Well, milt run, and I don't catch nothing. Well, finally he's up towards the dam. I started catching some good ones, you know. But I only had three, or I had four, and I had one 12-incher. And I knew it wasn't going to win. Well, you know, I just kept on looking down at my hummingbird, and that time just kept getting faster.
Yeah. It's like it flies. You know. Yeah,
it's a bad feeling. And so I said, let's roll. He's like, Jake said, all right. So we pull in this creek, and there's like a 2-pounder on bed. As soon as I come in, I flip, and end up foul hooking her. I turn back, which I knew that 2 pounds wasn't going to help me anyways. I'm actually glad it happened. Not intentionally foul hooked her, you know, just the way she rolled up on her side and flared her gills. I just got her on top, on the cheek. So, we head on about our business, and we get in there, and Whitey's not in there, or nowhere to be seen. I said, what in the? So I come around the corner in there, and I look, and there's one just pulled up, and she is white as a ghost. I mean, you just know she just got there. So
fresh. Freshie, yeah.
That old freshie. So I'm flipping, this, that, nothing. I mean, she's kind of, you know, doing that type deal, but, well, my dad about 20 years ago, I'm 31 now, I mean, he was fishing the Mark's Outdoors Tournament.
Mark's Tournament, yeah.
Fished down there first time I ever
met. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We go in that creek, and we fish one forever, and it's in May, same time of year. Well, he whoops out this bomber, long A, chartreuse foil or something like that color. Well, he throws that jerkbait over there, and he gets that fish positioned just right. Well, she just comes over and just, I'm talking about, gets it. So that just reminded me, you know, at that moment that, you dummy, why ain't you doing that? And I've caught him like that, not in elite series, but I caught him in the open at Chickamauga doing it. Yeah. I only caught one, but, you know, if you ever get one that's stubborn, but I don't like using it because it's so dangerous.
Right.
I mean, if you hook them on the side of the head or anything like that, You know, it's just too much risk there. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there. I get the jerk bait out, and it still got the old bronze hook on it. All right. So I'm like, this ain't it. I said, I got to hurry up. You know, time is ticking. It's like 1:30.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. No, it's like almost 2 o'clock actually. So I get in my bag and I get my Gamagatsu's out, put number four magic eye on there, throw it up there, and she comes out, you know, and she's just, you watching the video, she's just, and she don't get it. Well, I throw it up there and it's a floater. I just got it sitting there. I'm like, I ain't moving until she comes over there by it, and I'm going to jerk it right there in front of her face. Well, I do it, and you can just see her just go over and just, I'm talking about just T-bone it. Well, I get her the boat, and she jumps over my hand. Well, a hook comes out of one side of her mouth and lands right in my thumb, and I'm talking about this bad, like real bad.
Oh.
And I turned to Jake, and I said, man, I said, "You can you help me?" He said, yeah. I said, "You know how to get them out?" He said, "Yeah, I pull it up on YouTube." I said, "Dude," I said, "I don't know too much about this YouTube stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, you want to see how a man acts? Let him get a hook in his hand.
Yeah.
You're a different animal then, you know." So I'm just, I put the fish in the well. I got five now. I got one little one. All right. So I said, "Man, this ain't good." And he's like, "No, it's not." And he's like, "You got some ice?" I said, "Yeah." And I put the ice on my hand for like, now it's like, no lie, it's like 2:05 now. So, yep. And I got 25 minutes to fish, and I'm like 5 minutes idling out of this creek, and it's 30 minute run back. So I finally get numb enough a few minutes. Well, I had to take a hoodie and bite down on it. I couldn't do the braid trick because the way that it was all messed up. All I had was just some good old Gamagatsu pliers with the cutters on the side, you know what I mean? Well, I could just cut it, but I couldn't get it perfect behind that barb.
Right.
I finally pushed the barb through, and I just could not cut it. So I said, "Dude," I said, "we got to go."
Yeah.
So I got to go find somebody. So I can't make a cast. And he's like, "All right, man." So he's like, "Dang it, Will. If you only knew how close you was to win this tournament." I mean, there's like a couple fish swimming around, you know, and I knew I really couldn't make them bite in the back of my mind. So I'm taking the troll motor, hauling out of there. When I get it right there by that bush, Whitey is there. I
said, Whitey shows up. She just shows up.
I said, "You sorry dog."
Yes.
I was like, "Oh well." I go and I'm going out through there, and I lift up my troll motor. There's stumps everywhere in there. It reminds me of the 08 Classic where you just get up all on them stumps, you know, the one that skied one.
Oh yeah.
So it's not that bad, but it can be bad if you get on one. So I'm idling out through there, and I'm just praying, "God, please let somebody be out here." And, you know, all I need was somebody just have a pair of cutters.
Yeah.
I get out to the mouth of this creek, and the guy just sat down in his skeeter boat out there. He just pulled up to cheer me on when I come out there.
Wow.
And I said, "Sir," I said, "do you have a pair of dykes or a pair of cutters?" And he said, he didn't say nothing. He just pointed down. I never forget. He grabbed them things, man. They looked like they were as big as my boat. You know, I was like, thank God, you know. So I get over there. I get up there. Jake cuts it. I slide it out. And it's crazy how this smooth is. Just right out of your hand, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, "You got a phone on you?" And he said, yeah. He said, "What's your number?" And I gave it to him. I said, "What's your name?" He said, "My name is such and such, but my nickname is Whitey."
Whoa.
Yes, sir. Yes,
wow.
Sir. So,
oh, man.
I got cold chills, and I'm getting cold chills right now. And I gave him my number. He came to weigh in. I hooked him up, you know, of course. Bought him a brand new pair of dykes. And yep. I still have his lucky dykes or cutters in my boat. I go back in there. I put a brand new hook on. Whitey's pulled up. She's there. Second cast, I catch her. It's a winning fish.
Wow. That is so unbelievable. It's amazing because I knew the story, but I didn't know the actual Whitey person. part of the story. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry it took so long, but it takes a while for a story to develop like that.
That's unbelievable. I mean, that, you know, listen, if you're listening or watching this right now, if you don't believe in something higher, you should, because whether it's from a religious standpoint, philosophical standpoint, whatever it is, I believe it. Well, I believe that because it's happened too many times. It's happened to me moments like that. But
and you can feel it too.
It's weird. You can feel it. Yeah, it's tangible. You can feel it. I mean, I can tell you as a spectator of that tournament, you know, I could feel it just watching it. Like, you know, you didn't know what was going on, but I saw Christy lose a fish that was a winning fish. I saw Polinick lose a winning fish. And then you see something like that happen. And, you know, I'm not taking anything away from a person's skill or desire or drive, because I have that. And, you know, but when it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Do you believe that?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And man, I don't care how bad you want it. If it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be either. And I think that's where us bass fishermen, we kind of, we get very sidetracked between the two, I guess, sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when everything's going good, it's going good. But when everything's going bad, it's going bad, you know. So.
Yep. It's a hard road to navigate. I've been doing it a long time, and I'm probably not as good as most with handling the highs and the lows. My highs are really high and my lows are really low. And but you know, I think when you put it in perspective that you're doing something you love and that you gotta just let it happen. Like, man, try to control your own destiny as much as you can, but at the end of the day, you just work hard. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, you know, and that's been my solace in my career for winning and losing, you know, for winning the Classic and losing the Classic to Skeet by 8 ounces. You know, you work hard, and when it's your time, you know, I believe that. I believe
that. I mean, all you can ask for is to be in contention on the last day to do good.
Yeah.
And, you know, from there, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, you know. So
yeah. But I believe it.
You can't give up. I mean, you just. But it's little decisions like we talked about, you know, just that the change from the dam to go to that creek, you know. I think that's the different makers and winning tournaments and not winning tournaments.
I believe that. I believe that's true. Speaking of winning tournaments, I want to. It's a great segue, Will. To we've talked a lot about some of these great wins you've had in the last year, starting with Pickwick and of course at Lay, but man, I mean, recently, like what are we talking? Two or three, it's gotta be 2 or 3 weeks, right? What are we talking here? Two or three weeks, right?
Two weeks ago. 18th to the 20th.
Yeah. I mean, talk about recent. I got a chance to come down and see you guys and speak to you guys, and I could feel the energy and excitement, and you were there as the defending champion. And later in that week, I had to fly home for a couple days, and I had to go to Toyota Owners Tournament. But the whole time at the Toyota Owners Tournament, I'm on my phone like a little school kid, you know, like geeking out on the coverage. And it's funny because the coverage is like spotty. It's not like what you have on the elites, you know. So that's like I'm trying to get updates, and I'm like, update. I'm smashing the phone, but dude, amazing that you come to the national championship on Hartwell as the defending national champion and you win the event 2 weeks ago. I mean, you still got to be on cloud nine. Like this is fresh. This is just a couple weeks ago. How does it feel? Like it's gotta be amazing.
Yeah. You know, every win is, you know, very special, and I'm super stoked about it. With that being said, that lake clicked with me. And you know what I mean? You know, some lakes don't click with you and some lakes do. And that lake just clicked with me.
Do you find that strange, though, because it's a herring lake that it clicks with you? Because Lay Lake is not a herring lake. Lay Lake is a shad-based lake.
That's right.
And then you show up at Hartwell and it's like, boom, boom, boom. Why? Tell me why.
Lake Martin is a reservoir down here, and you fished.
Yes.
It was probably one of the best herring lakes there for a couple of years in Alabama, which there's really only one other. I mean, you got Smith Lake that we're going to. But it kind of – it's a well-defined pattern lake, and I'm a pattern fisherman. I'm a running gunner. I'm a fast fisherman.
Yeah.
It probably hurts me sometimes, but that's just my style. And with that being said – It was pretty similar to that lake, and I just knew that the fish live deeper on a herring lake than they do on a shad-based lake. So that being said, with the forward-facing sonar where we're at this day and age, if you're not utilizing that tool, you're getting smoked.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that can hide out there no more, and that's a whole nother, you know, story. But
yeah.
With that being said, it definitely helped me coming from this area and having Lake Martin so close to me.
Right. Right. I thought it was interesting that I saw a lot of your competitors in that tournament scale down to catch those fish. I watched a lot of them during the event go from 8 pound to 6 pound or 6 pound to 4 pound, little spinning rods, little baits drop. You heard a lot of drop shot. You heard a lot of the Miki style baits. And then I was watching you sort of do the opposite. Like I caught a lot of fish on big baits, on power fishing.
Right.
What? How? Why was that? Talk about that.
So it's weird that how it all happened. So I had about 100 piles marked. And all I did, you know, a month and a half before the tournament, you know, the cutoff's like whatever, a month or so. I went up there and practiced. And I just rode and marked a bunch of piles, you know, different, you know, depths.
Yeah.
And I had this one brush pile that was pretty close to the grain pond. And the last day of practice, I pull up there. And I ain't wolfed out this jig or nothing. I'm still trying to, you know, catch them like we do at Martin on drop shot. And I knew that these fish they're so conditioned at seeing this.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
They're like, nah, I don't think
very
so.
Pressured. Very pressured. Yeah. Yes.
So all these fish are sitting on this pile. Well, I throw my deal over there, throw my fluke, throw my spook. I throw everything. But it took all that to get me in the right state of mind to tie on this jig. So with the forward facing sonar, it shaves off a lot of time. You see how the fish react, you know exactly where they're sitting, how they're sitting, what, you know, a lot of times which way they're facing.
Right.
So with that being said, I knew to throw this jig or my dad's jig, and that's how we won a lot of money on Logan Martin. And it's the same type color water. So I tie on this jig, on our jig, it's a 1/2 ounce. And because the pile ain't even like 10 foot of water.
Right.
Well, this same fish keeps on following my bait out every time. I mean, it's probably about a 2-2.5 pounder. Man, I can see, you know, on my deal.
Yeah.
I throw this jig over there, first cast, lands right from the pile. This fish swims over to it. And I'm watching my jig, and this fish just levels off. Well, I pick up, she got it. So I was like, whack, catch her. That one fish won that tournament for me.
It was a clue. That fish
it was the winning clue.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so
but
awesome.
It don't always happen that way, though.
Yeah.
I love
that. It's a great story because I try to, we do Bass University seminars and stuff, and I always try to teach people about, you know, like every bite, there's a reason for the bite, right? Everything happens and it's like,
I've heard you
yeah,
speak of this.
There's no random bites. Like every bite leads you to the next bite or the next fish. And man, I don't know if I've ever heard a better story than that just on how it happens. And that's a great example of how that happens. You know, that fish led you to more fish and ultimately to the win. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, you know, it was very, I'm always a humble person. you'll never hear me brag. You know, my dad whooped me as a child for bragging. You know, that's just how I was raised. And just let your actions speak through life, you know, and that's how I was raised. And, you know, with that being said, we'll get back to the fishing standpoint of that tournament. After I caught that fish, you know, of course, all the light bulbs went off in my head. I'm like, so
ding, ding, ding,
my dad,
ding, ding.
My dad made me some 3/4 ounce jigs to flip the milfoil or whatever type of vegetation it was up there at Champlain.
Yeah.
But I never went and practiced up there. So I just kind of went off of what I've seen on YouTube and all that stuff. So he made me them heavier jigs. So I knew I had them in my box and I never used them up there. You know, I tied one on, but I never fished it. So yeah. I'm like, all right, it's weird. It happened for a reason. I kept them in my boat and, you know, I kept like 10 of them in there, you know, and we're always trying to conserve weight, you know, take yeah. out this, take out that. So, but I just kept them in there. So I take them out because I started fishing out further and further to that 30 to 40 foot range.
Mm.
Well, I could catch them fish day one and day two on that 15 to 25 foot range. But I changed to that 3/4 after that fish because I wanted to go deeper. I mean, faster. I wanted to shoot in front of her because I knew I was going to be fishing deeper water and it took too much time for that jig just to get down there to him.
Right.
So right. I tied that jig on, trimmed the weed guard because I needed a weed guard because there's so much there. You can definitely tell what the brush is on your live, on your deal.
Yeah.
So I knew I was fishing around just sporadic brush. It wasn't like I was throwing out old school dragging over brush and just seesawing it. I was targeting these fish just like I would up north with a drop shot. So I would see them throw to them. They'd follow it down or come up to it and level off. They'd get it on the first cast or they wouldn't get it and I'd go right. on. So right. with that being said, that 3/4 ounce won that tournament for me all the way from Lake Champlain.
Wow. So,
ain't that crazy how that works?
So crazy. And again, you know, just getting back to our theory, I think it's so true that little things sometimes happen the way they're supposed to happen. And very similar. I've had a lot of stuff in my career happen like that with a lure or a color, you know, like where I don't even know why it was in there, but it was in there. And then it helps me not always win, but it helps me catch an extra fish. And that helps, you know, it's just, like a domino process, but man, it's so true. It's so true. Well, listen, first of all, congrats on a second national championship. Like that's incredible. But to do it like that, to do it, you know, it was so different to do it power fishing with jigs. Really, I think it opened up my eyes to, hey man, we're fishing pressured fish wrong. Sometimes, you know, we're doing it the wrong way. We got to let the fish tell us what they want and not necessarily what the book says, you know? So that was an awesome, awesome win, man. Awesome win. And then, well, the win gets you a lead invite again, which you didn't need, but get you that. It gets you the classic berth, which helped one of our guys on the other side. How are they working the elite berth? So do you have like a grace year now? That's what I would have negotiated for. If I won 2 years, you know, a second time, I would have been like, all right, look, I'm going to keep this elite berth in my pocket in case I ever have a bad year. Like, you know, like a business card in your wallet, you know, pull it out. Right. Hey, I got it.
That's right. They, if you win the tournament, like I did, very blessed to win the tournament for the second time, I'm already in, like Mike said, you know, I'm already in there for the next year. So it goes down to the next person, which was Tim Doobie.
That's awesome. So, good. Well, good for him. And that's
absolutely. He's well deserving and he's a heck of a fisherman. And I don't know if he's going to take the bid. I'm pretty sure he is. He'll be a force to be reckoned with.
That's awesome. Well, man, I, you know, like I said, the guys that do it that route, not taking anything away from the high school and college anglers and the anglers that grind on the opens, they're tough routes as well. But for the anglers like yourself and Tim who do it through.
And like you.
That makes- and like me, I really, really have a place in my heart for those guys because it's hard. It's the grassroots level. It's the grinding man's way to make it. And it's a special thing. But well, I can't thank you enough for coming on, dude. It was so many. I honestly had notes and stuff that I wrote, and I hardly followed any of them because the stories just kind of happened on their own. And I love to hear those moments like that where it's almost like meant to be. It's like just happening. Like those things make me so happy to hear those stories. And I know our listeners appreciate it. But I can't thank you enough for coming on, Will. This was a cool hour I got to spend with you today.
Heck yeah, man. It's an honor being on your show and you contacting me and seeing you at Hartwell. Great speech.
Thank you.
When you walked up, I was like, I didn't even read the packet, you know, and I'm like, that's Mike, you know. I said, man, he's dressed up nice, you know. And, it was a great time, great atmosphere, and done really well.
It was awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and it was a pleasure fishing with you last year. I cannot wait to fish with you again this coming year. Very, very excited about the schedule, and we'll see you out there for sure. And good luck, continued success. Well, I hope you keep smashing them.
I appreciate it, Mike, and good luck next season.
Yes, sir. You got it. Will Davis, everyone. Thanks, Will.
Thank you, Mike.
Have a good one. All right, guys, there you have it. That was freaking awesome. Feels so good to have a fellow elite angler on, but even deeper than that, a fellow grassroots nation angler on the show. Feels really good to know. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that I came up through the clubs, and it feels great to have another successful angler on to talk about that. So shout out to Will for coming on. Let me remind everybody, you're watching the Ike Live 2.0. This is the up close and personal version of Ike Live. And we've been around 10 years now, guys. I know it's crazy, but 10 years of this amazing podcast. You're so important to the show. If you're listening and watching, please send us a message on social media. Send us a message right on the IkeLive.com site. You can drop us a comment there. We want to know, do you like the show? What do you want to hear about? You have comments? What guests do you want? Please drop us a line. And thank you for your continued support. Also, just a reminder, we've got the Ike Foundation Scholarship Banquet happening in late January. It's never too early to get your tickets. If you live in the Northeast, even if you don't live in the Northeast, come on up to the banquet. Get a table. Get a seat. It's a night of camaraderie and food and fun and drinks and a little gambling sprinkled in there for good measure, all to raise money for kids fishing. And scholarships. So appreciate you watching. We've got a really good one for you. I'm going to tease it a little bit. This is an MLF guy who qualified for the Bass Pro Tour next year. A lot of nice timing going on with this. We've got Gray Buck joining us on the next show. Can't wait to talk to Gray. In the meantime, hope you have a wonderful day. Hope you have a good evening or day or night. And tune in next time. We'll see you. Bye, everybody.
You know, right now where we're standing, we're in Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Philadelphia is right there. This is the concrete jungle. And, you know, a lot of those kids, as they grow up, they don't fish. It's interesting because they're surrounded by water. You know, the Delaware River, the Schuylkill, ponds, city park lakes. But they don't have the influence to cast, to fish, to have a rod and reel. And that became our focus, you know, is to target kids in what we call non-traditional areas, you know, urban areas, city centers, where the population's high, and let these kids have the experience. You know, it's amazing. I mean, some of the experiences we've had, whether it's Central Park in New York City, here in Camden, other parts of the country, even just casting.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to see it, isn't it?
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yes.
And you know, you see these kids have this experience they've never had, and they light up, you know? The big thing, I think, for the Ike Foundation is we're not saying we want all these kids to become professional anglers.
No. It'd
be great if some of them did, but we want them to have that fishing experience because it ties them to so many other positive things. The outdoors, nature, conservation. Ecology, you know, all these amazing things in life that maybe they wouldn't have been exposed to any other way, we're trying to help with that. So it's important. It's important for us. Yeah. We're proud of it.
I
subscribe to BassU TV,
and so should you.
Great place to learn about anything you want to know about bass fishing.
You get it at BassU. We got the best of the best.
I'm not just an instructor, I'm a subscriber.
I'm John Cruz, and I am a subscriber.
You can always learn, and watching BassU is definitely helps with that. It's something that I like to do, and it's definitely something that you need to do.
If I'm still learning, you should be too.
Subscribe to BassU, because you'll learn how to catch a lot more fish.